sorry, I'm short. Good evening, everybody. My name is Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Jennifer.
So nice to see all of you tonight. I'm very grateful to be asked to speak. You know, it's always, you always get up in your head when you start, you know, you're asked to speak. But I think the longer I'm around, the more comfortable I am, and just the more experience I can relate to you guys. My sobriety date is May 2nd, 2005. I have a sponsor. I have a home group, which is We Are Not Saints in Virginia Beach. And I'm very grateful to Crystal and Ross for coming out with us tonight. I ate way too much at dinner. So good thing I'm standing up here, because otherwise I would have fallen asleep. I grew up pretty much in Virginia Beach. My dad was a Navy chief, and you know, we moved around a little bit until I was about 9 years old, and we settled here in Virginia Beach. I was an only child. I hung around with adults most of the time. I didn't feel comfortable with people my age. I didn't really have best friends or anything, but when I got to Virginia Beach, there was a group of girls that were in the neighborhood that, you know, I got to be friends with. And, you know, it helped a little bit, but I still had that gnawing feeling that I didn't belong, you know? I wasn't girly enough, or I wasn't tomboyish enough, or, you know, I wasn't enough of any one thing. And when I found alcohol at 14, or around about there, I found I could fit in anywhere. I could fit in with any group. I could be anyone. And I don't even remember what it was. I think it was like pink champagne for New Year's Eve that, you know, my parents had the neighbors over, and, you know, they left a bottle where me and my friend could drink some, and we drank it. And, you know, the next time they had a get-together, I snuck some more drinks, you know. It wasn't something that I sought out, but I sure as heck was going to take advantage of every opportunity to drink. And right from the start, I did not drink like other people. I drank to excess from the start. I remember going to a friend's house for a sleepover, and we were drinking like Wild Turkey and Mad Dog 2020. And, I mean, yeah, it wasn't great, y'all. And just getting so drunk that I could not function. And, you know, nobody else seemed to be that way. I was the only one that got that way. And that pattern repeated itself over and over again through the years. I came by my alcoholism, honestly, it was passed down. You know, my grandfather died of alcoholism, my father died of alcoholism. Cirrhosis is not a great way to go. I gotta say, it's an ugly disease, and it doesn't kill you quick. So, you know, I grew up in a fairly happy household. My dad wasn't a mean drunk, but, you know, he was a drunk. Yeah, he drank to excess. And, you know, when I was younger and a teenager or so, I thought it was pretty amusing. You know, my friends would come over on Friday night after they had been at the Chiefs Club and just listen to my dad rant and rave. I wasn't aware that this was a problem. You know, so when I was drinking like that, I wasn't aware that I had a problem. I thought that this was the way you were supposed to live. I thought when I got to be of age and was doing the same stuff, I thought that's the way most adults go through their weekends, blind drunk, you know, and then they, you know, wake up on Monday morning, go to work. And, you know, for that was for a while what I did. There was a period in high school where I didn't drink, and that was a strange period, but I had gotten so sick on grain alcohol back when it was legal. I guess it's legal again, I don't know. I had gotten so sick that my friends were concerned I would die. I remember them giving me like CPR. But that didn't deter me. I mean, really. but I did lay off. I did stop for a while because a friend of mine had gotten alcohol poisoning and gone to the hospital and gotten a lot of trouble. So I said, well, let me see if I can do this. So I did for a while in high school, and I was a designated driver. I would take care of everybody. But when I was 20 years old, I got engaged. I figured since my parents had gotten married at 20 years old, I could do it too. Lots of emulating there. And at my right before I got married, I decided it was a good time to start drinking again. Should have been a sign, y'all. So I started drinking again. It was like I never stopped because I was just as bad. You couldn't take me anywhere. I would go away. You wouldn't be able to find me. You'd be searching and searching. You know, if you wanted to leave a club or a party, I did not want to leave yet. And I wouldn't let you leave because you would have to try to find me. So, you know, I wasn't very popular. Towards the end of my drinking, nobody wanted to hang out with me. I was not a fun drunk. I was a mean drunk. I would verbally abuse you. And if I was dating you, I'd probably physically abuse you too. I've taken some swings at people and gotten kicked out of some bars. There was one time I projectile vomited on all my coworkers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was a sign I should stop doing shots, y'all. Not that I should stop drinking, I should just stop doing shots. And tequila made me meaner, so I stopped drinking tequila. For a while it was okay, it was manageable. I could do it just on the weekends. It was filling that hole. It was making me feel all right, less awkward. It made me feel like I could go anywhere. But eventually, the aforementioned friends stopped wanting to hang out. I would call you at 2 o'clock in the morning. This was before like I really started using cell phones, but I would call you at 2 o'clock in the morning and tell you just what I thought was wrong with your life. And nobody wants to hear that at 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But, that's where I was. I blamed all my problems on outside things. I had the wrong job. I lived in the wrong place. I had the wrong friends. I couldn't find the right boyfriend. All the things out there were the things that were wrong with me. And I remember going to see a licensed clinical therapist. And, after 3 sessions, she handed me an AA meeting list. And I said, this couldn't possibly be the problem. And I fired her and never went back. I don't know how honest I was with that lady, but she must have heard something in what I was saying. Because I don't believe I just laid my whole soul bare for her. But it must have been really, really, really obvious that I had a problem. I did stupid things while drinking. I think we all do stupid things. One of the best things I did, or the most memorable things I did, was I was coming home from the oceanfront, and I must have hit a curb on back tire, and the back tire went flat, and I was just dry. I kept driving. I was like, I'm going to make it home. I'm going to make it home. And I'm going down Virginia Beach Boulevard. And I remember passing a cop who had somebody else pulled over. And I'm sparking. I mean, the fire. Fire is coming out. And I think I remember the cop just going, what the heck, lady? So he made me pull over into the McDonald's parking lot. And I had to leave my car there, and they took me home. I don't know what kind of angels were watching over me that night, because I most certainly should have gone to jail. I was loaded. And, you know, it just continued like that. I mean, just stupid. It talks about stupid, tragic things we do. I did all those things. I ended up in places I shouldn't have been. I remember being in Portsmouth at 2 o'clock in the morning, having no idea how I got there or where I was. You know, I remember just blacking out and ended up places. Thank goodness I didn't black out that often, but it was really, really, really frightening when it happened. And, you know, I was getting older. I was, you know, I hit 30. I was, you know, still single. Because I couldn't, I mean, nobody could stand to be around me for that long. I had driven everybody away. Because, you know, of the fighting and the verbal abuse. And, you know, things had stopped being so fun. And I started drinking at home. So after work, I would go to the Farm Fresh and find whatever bottle of wine was on sale and take that home and drink it until I either passed out downstairs or crawled up the stairs to go to bed. And I, you know, went to work the next morning. I put on the sunglasses and nobody bothered me. Thankfully, I had a job where that kind of partying was accepted and encouraged. I remember going to a Chick's Beach bar, and one of the owners of my company was there, and she bought our rounds for the night. I was like, you're my best friend. I love you. But it started to get a little sad, you know? I was seeing the ladies at the Chick's Beach bars that looked like they had been through the wars. And they were just sitting there smoking their cigarettes and on that bar stool. And I just imagined a whole life, you know, a whole life for them. You know, they had to go home to their 10 cats. And, you know, and they're working at the junior market. And I'm like, that's going to be me. I'm going to end up that person. It was so scary. But, you know, it really didn't discourage me until one night I couldn't drink with anybody else from work because they had seen the projectile vomiting episode where I had to buy people new clothes and stuff. But there was a new girl at work who hadn't partied with me. So she seemed like a fun gal. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go. We're going to get hammered. And, you know, we went out. And it wasn't even that bad night. She partied even harder than I did. She had other party favors that I had never tried. There was all kinds of things going on with her. And, it, you know, I didn't drive. You know, I had messed up my car a bunch of times. I had, you know, spent all my money. I had lost things. This night wasn't even that bad. But I couldn't get out of bed for 2 days after that. It was a Saturday night, and I couldn't move. I could not move. I couldn't even go to work Monday morning. That was it for me. Something happened, and I felt somebody talking to me and said, you're not supposed to live like this. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was my first spiritual experience, you know, if I was hallucinating, having DT, I don't know. I don't know what was happening. But I had had a friend who was going to AA and who had called me. I hadn't heard from this person a couple years. And they had called me like a month before this. And they, you know, they said, I'm going to AA. You know, I got my fifth DUI or whatever it was. I'm going to AA and do it for a while. He lived out here in Suffolk. And I said, okay. All right. And one time we were on the phone and he said to me, when you're ready, let me know. He didn't say you're drunk, you know, you need help, you need to go to AA. He just said, when you're ready, let me know. And by that Monday evening, I was ready. I said, there's got to be something better than the way I'm living. Because, I mean, I'm alone. I'm drinking by myself. I'm going to end up like those ladies at Chick's Beach bars. I got to do something else. So I called him, and He said, right. He came out from here and he brought me to a meeting, Small Shores on Monday nights in Virginia Beach. Now, I walked into that meeting and everybody seemed like they were ancient. They were old and they were laughing. And then they started sharing. And they were sharing stories that you wouldn't share in regular company, you know, polite company. And then they were laughing about it. I was really kind of freaked out. But they seemed happy, you know. I did not think they were lying, but I just did not know what they had. But I knew that I wanted to try to get it. I wasn't real enthusiastic about how it went about, you know, getting in AA. I stayed on the fringes for a while. I remember I was going to a meeting where a young lady asked me to come to a committee meeting. She's like, we've got this committee, you know, we're putting on this conference, you should come to the committee meeting. I'm like, okay, sure. And then two guys almost got in a fist fight at this committee meeting. I'm like, this is just messed up, y'all. Mm-hmm. What is going on? But then somebody pulled out the traditions. And that's my favorite, you know. That tradition saved somebody's life, or at least saved a broken tooth, you know. And I began to start to see the stuff in action, you know. I stuck around long enough to see the light come on in people's eyes that I had come in with. You know, I didn't feel that light within myself, but I began to see people change. The reason I did not feel that light, you know, in myself was because I was kind of doing these steps half-heartedly. I did not believe that they were applicable to me because, you know, my life was not that bad. You know, you couldn't have told me that when I walked in the room. I thought, you know, things were over, but with a little clarity and a little, you know, that fog kind of clearing, you tend to think, you know, maybe I don't need to do all these steps. Maybe it's not for me. These people are way worse. Great, it works for them, but maybe not for me. About a year and a half into AA, I started to feel real miserable, real miserable. And at that time, I had a sponsor. I had done the steps, nominally with her. I mean, now that I think about it, I probably did them to the best of that I could. There were lots of things I remembered later that I could add to stuff. So I decided to get a new sponsor and go through the steps again. You know, and I did it again. It was fine, you know. But I stuck around in AA for a while, not feeling the sunlight of the spirit like they talk about. I was reading in the promises, we'll be able to look the world in the eye, and I did not feel like I could do that. I remember making a goal list with some ladies one year. We did it every January 1st, and I, you know, put down a goal, look the world in the eye. You know, I just had to be willing to do that work, and I wasn't willing yet. So, you know, I continued to, you know, just go to AA and go to the social functions, and, you know, things were fine until about 5 years in, 5.5 years in. I was on the verge of drinking. I mean, I really think I was. I thought about it a lot, and I could not figure out why I was so miserable. It was just a tough time. I kept thinking the world owed me something, you know. I'm like, I stayed sober for 5 years, you know. Where's my pot of gold? Where's my stuff? Where's my recognition? And, you know, I went to a meeting and I invited this lady that I'd seen to dinner afterward. And I sat in the booth across from her and I just started crying. And I was like, I don't understand why. This is so hard. And, you know, she said to me, are you willing to go to any lengths? I'm like, after 5.5 years, maybe, sure. But it turns out I was. I was still so fearful and angry, and I really needed to go through those steps again with this lady. Now, this had been about the fifth time I'd gone through steps, because if the sponsor that I had at the time didn't have the answer that I liked, I would go out and find another sponsor. And it wasn't them. It was me. It was me. I was not ready. But I did, you know, I did feel like this is the jumping off place. Either I'm going to do these steps again, and or I'm going to drink. And I, there was no guarantee that I'd come back. I was pretty sure I wouldn't come back if I drank. So I put my mind to it. I asked God for help, and I started to do these steps with my current sponsor. And I had a totally different experience. And that was because I was completely honest. I was completely honest with myself. I was completely honest with her. I felt that weight lifted. You know, the first step is something I'd have to do every day with everyone. I have no power. I have no power over anybody besides myself. And I have no power over alcohol. You know, if I didn't believe that there was something out there that could help me, I certainly wouldn't be standing here in front of you tonight. I don't know. This is opinion, editorial time. I don't know how people stay sober without a God of their understanding. I need that God. I need him to guide me. I need him to talk to. I need to know it's there, you know? I need to know that there's something there that is looking out for me. Because that's the voice, I think, that was talking to me that first night. So, you know, I did the second step. Third step, I always struggled with. Until somebody said to me, if you're having a problem with the third step, do the rest of the steps. I was like, well, if it was crap, is that simple? And it turns out it was. All I had to do was do the rest of the steps. And I started to have a relationship with a power greater than myself that I could deal with on a daily basis. There was no, you know, scary, fiery brimstone and all that. You know, there was just an entity that I could call when I needed help. And even when I didn't need help, when I just wanted to talk. And turning my will and my life over to that power was such a relief. I didn't know it could feel that good. I was like, why wasn't I doing this before? I was all up in my head all the time. Now, don't get me wrong. I still get up in my head. I mean, all the time. But I know that there's an answer today. I know I don't have to live like that. You know, when I did the fourth step and fifth step with my sponsor, I felt the weight lifted. I felt I could look the world in the eye finally. Finally, I could do that. And, you know, we went in depth on 6 and 7. We did the books, y'all. We did the extra books. We did the extra work because I needed it. I needed remedial steps, and that's what I got. You know, step 8, what really helped me with step 8 was making a list of the people and then writing down how I would feel if they, you know, if I had done that, you know, if that would done that to me, if they'd done that to me. And that really changed my perspective. And it made it a whole lot easier to go to these people and, you know, and offer these amends. Amends are something that, you know, aren't pleasant for anybody, but I sure as heck feel a lot better when I get them done. I don't want that. It's like the sword of Damocles hanging over me. I don't want that. You know, and today I don't mind doing stuff for other people. And I never thought I would say that, because I was very selfish, and it was all about me and my needs and my wants. But today I feel good when I'm able to help people or make them feel good. Just say, you look great today. thanks for your help, any of that stuff. And it's such a change for me. And when I think about it, I mean, these steps just change my perspective. And that's the biggest thing. They just change the way I looked at the world. You know, I didn't like people. I almost said I don't like people. I'm still not my favorite thing to be with a lot of people. But, you know, I can try to see the good in people today, whereas, you know, I didn't used to be able to do that. I find myself being able to forgive more easily because I know that I'm not perfect, and, you know, I shouldn't expect anybody else to be either. And expectations are what's going to drive that bus right into my rear end. And, you know, the rest of the steps, 10 is pretty invaluable to me today. It's an accounting. I like how in the big book it talks about your inventory. You're not going to keep the stuff that's bad stock. And that's what step 10 does for me daily. You know, let's take a look at that. God, can you help me with this defect? It keeps showing up, God. Can you do something about that? And then I have to be patient, which is not my strong suit. I have to be patient and wait for God to deign to relieve me of that character defect, if indeed he does. I don't know what any of my character defects are benefiting other people, but if God says so, then they must know better than I do. 12 has been such a blessing too, because trying to practice these principles in all my affairs has changed the way I work. It has changed the way I deal with people in any situation. I am trying to practice these principles in all my affairs. My husband may disagree with you sometimes, but I do my best. I do my best. It's like the closer it is, the harder it is to do these things. But, you know, and working with other people is so beneficial. Many people are frightened to work with other people. I get it. It's frightening, but it's not like you're holding their life in your hands. You're just guiding them through the steps. I'm not trying to be a financial advisor, marriage counselor, employment agent, any of those things. I am just trying to tell you how I got sober, and if I've been able to deal with these situations in the past. And if not, can I refer you to somebody who did? Because I've had many of those situations where I don't know. I've never had that situation come up. Let me get you this lady's number so that she can guide you. She's been through the exact same thing. Please let me refer you to her. And, you know, that's an ego thing. That's an ego deflation for me. And that's just what I need. Because when I did that fourth and fifth step with my sponsor, we took a look at that, and she said, your ego is out of control. You couldn't have told me that. I was like, what do you mean? I do service in AA, and I work, and I'm nice to people. She's like, you feel entitled. Your ego is just unchecked. And that was a slap in the face. I tell you, that's a cold bucket of water. And it was really true. I had to stop feeling so entitled. I had to stop feeling like the world owed me something. This is it. And this is better than I could have imagined. You know, the things I get to do today, the life I get to lead, you know, I may not always appear grateful, especially with my job, but I am grateful. I am grateful that I got to live this long. You know, I'm grateful that I'm not dying of cirrhosis. You know, I'm grateful that I didn't end up like those ladies on a bar stool. I mean, it could happen, but hopefully not, knock on wood. You know, all those things are still out there for me. So, you know, I've always heard that people in sobriety between 10 and 15 years tend to drift away, you know, and not stop going to meetings and stop participating. And that scared me. Just like the people who went out scared me when I was new. When they came back in, they did not look the best. It wasn't like they got a makeover out there. Most of them had gotten beaten up or had been in jail or, you know, other bad things had happened. It hadn't gotten any better. So I am super grateful for everybody that comes back into these rooms. And I'm so glad, I'm so happy that everybody, you know, who makes it back in, made it back in. Because there's lots of people that don't. And that's very sad. That is something I had to learn to live with. People who are new get torn up when people go back out, you know. And I went through that, for sure. Today, you know, you just say a prayer. I just say a prayer and just hope that they make it back. I am very fortunate that I have not had to go and do some other research, you know. I keep in mind, my first sponsor, I think, had me write out my last drunk, you know, just write it down on paper. And I refer to that when I'm, you know, think that I'm taking my will back, you know. I was like, okay, well, if I take my will back, I'm going to go out there and do this and snort that and be with that guy. And oh my God, that is evidence. That's black and white. That's going to tell me that drinking today is not a good idea. The facts were there, y'all. I just couldn't see them. I mean, if you had written down the stuff I had done and handed it to me and said somebody else did this, I'd say, well, they have a drinking problem. Because, I mean, it was facts. It was facts, facts, facts. Facts are big for me. I like facts. That's why I, you know, I liked people's stories. I'm like, fact. They were, you know, in jail. They murdered somebody. They, you know, got an accident. But they're here today. They're here today by doing the steps. I don't know what kind of magic is in the steps, but I know for me that they are the solution today. I know there's many other ways to get sober. God bless. Do what you need to do. But for me, the steps are what I need to do. And this is where I need to be, with the people that I need to be with. You know, we are people who would not normally mix. There are many people I see here that I was like, whoa, you know. But today I can look at them and love them. I may not like everybody in AA, but I do have to love them. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, is tested especially when you get into service work. When you start getting on committees. If you have a home group. Your patience can be tested. And, you know, like I said, that first committee meeting I went to and those guys almost got into a fist fight and somebody started waving the traditions about, mm-hmm. I'm like, well, those things save lives. I mean, that's awesome. That has really stuck with me and given me a real love of the traditions in AA literature. And, you know, my sponsor and I have gone through all kinds of books and stuff like that. Now we're, you know, doing some other books and, you know, not necessarily approved by GSO. But I find that I'm not as apprehensive doing more work. Because when I was 4 or 5 years sober, I was like, I don't want to do any more steps. I don't want to do this again. But today I look forward to it because I know that I'll peel off another layer. I know that I'll learn something. And when I'm growing, I'm still alive. And it's, you know, it's with that stuck period, like that 5.5 years, I was stuck. I felt like I was buried in the mud. And, you know, I had to be able to break out and start growing again. And that was, you know, working with this sponsor and starting to do things new. And I also think it was a big willingness problem. I had to be willing to be honest with another human being. Now, you know, I may have been honest as best as I could with the other sponsors, but I don't know. I can't explain it. But this one really did the trick. So now when I go through the steps with other women, I just encourage them to be honest. I was like, you may not remember all the stuff that you've done or you want to put on your list. That's okay. We can always go back. There's never a shut door on steps 4 and 5. You can always go back and do more. You know, I've stopped investing so much of my self-worth in if somebody stays sober or not. You know, because that used to be a big deal for me. If they went out and got drunk, or fired me or whatever, it'd be a personal affront. But today, I know that it's their journey, not mine. It's another example of that unselfishness that I never thought I would have. I'm still very selfish. I want things the way I like them. But today I can forgive other people for not doing things the way I like them. I remember a home group, we had a Christmas party, and the person who was supposed to organize and get all the plates and the cups and everything decided they had a temper tantrum, and they decided they weren't going to come, and they didn't bring any supplies. So we had these little cake plates, you know, we had all, you know, a bunch of food, and people had these little plates, and one of the guys was freaking out. He's like, oh my God, I got to go to the grocery store. And I was like, you know what? It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. And I didn't get mad at that person, and I didn't curse him out at the person who didn't bring the stuff. I was able to forgive him. You know, I didn't hold the resentment or anything. And that, I was really amazed. But that was like a 10-year sober, y'all. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. It was very slow. But that was when I knew that, things had really changed. I did not say that SOB, didn't bring those cups and those plates. And you know what? Things were fine. Things were fine. We fit. People had 3-4 plates, but you know, knock yourself out. But they, you know, everybody ate and everybody had a good time, and you know, nobody had to freak out like and run around like a chicken. Things are good today. You know, I got to be with my parents before they passed. You know, my dad was very sick for a long time, and it wasn't real pretty, but I was able to be there for my mom. And then about 18 months later, she passed. They had been together for 50 something years. So it didn't take long for her to go. But I feel so blessed that I was sober through all that. You know, I don't know what would have happened had I been drunk. The guilt I would have felt after they passed. I don't know. I don't even want to think about it. I'm just real grateful that I was able to be there for them. And, you know, it was hard to watch my dad drink himself to death. It was hard as a sober person. But it taught me so much. It taught me I can't get anybody sober. I mean, all I can do is offer and be an example. And that's it. That's all I can do. I cannot make anybody bend to my will as much as I want to. Am I talking a lot? Okay. So, I mean, it was hard, but I'm very grateful that I was able to do that. And, you know, things, you know, are different because I was very close to them. Things are different. When you're an orphan, it's weird, y'all. It's like, oh, I got no parents. But, you know, with the help of friends and family, I've been able to get through that. You know, and today things are good. I have a good job. No matter much how I complain about it, I have a great husband who's very patient with me. And I have lovely, lovely friends that I've had for a long time. I just went to visit my girlfriend in Richmond this week, and I got to see her. And you know, I've known her for 17 years. Amazing. And we still talk to each other. I haven't really, well, I mean, I've done things, but nothing that she hasn't forgiven me for. but the friends that I've made, the connections I've made with people in these rooms are unlike anything else that I've ever experienced. It's real. It's real. When somebody in AA asks me how I'm doing, I can tell them. You know, I've gotten to do things that I never thought I would do. Gotten to go places that I never thought I would go. I mean, when I was drinking, I never went anywhere. I mean, there were no vacations or anything like that. I would talk about it, but never got any gumption to go do anything. And, you know, when I got sober, at 5 months sober, I went to the Hawaii AA conference. 5 months sober. I'm like, well, F it. I'm not gonna go. I went to Scotland to visit a friend in the program and got to go to AA meetings over there. I got to go to San Antonio for the international conference and experience that. And that was pretty amazing. I mean, that's a lot of drunks. We took over that whole city. I mean, there were a lot of lanyards. There was a lot of raucous laughter. You would have thought we were drinking as much noise as we were making, but boy, that city loved to have us there. They welcomed us with open arms. And, you know, that's a change, too. Nobody's doing like this when I walk into a room these days, unless, you know, I'm asking them to do some service work. But nobody's, you know, real sad to see me. And for that, I am very, very appreciative. Today, I have a life that is okay. And I'm okay with that, which is a miracle. So thanks for letting me share.